Oh, good.
Nothing. There's nothing. I said nothing.
Okay. Anyway. Okay.
Wait, we can't record it?
Wait. Okay, it's being recorded. We're all good. Okay, here we go. Anyway, but back to our point. Okay, so we've got it right that all three of these are, again, are not even just within the same calendar year, they're even within 2 months, and therefore they're all part of the same story. Now, here's what's also, what this also changes in our perception is, if I would have asked at the beginning of this year, what holiday begins the year and what holiday ends the year? I think knee-jerk reaction, gut instinct, and it's totally, especially as somebody who's lived my entire life, even my entire adult life, in like the school calendar, meaning what would we say for like what holiday begins the year? Rosh Hashanah, right? It's even called Rosh Hashanah, right? And then what holiday ends the year? Shavuos. And it's like perfect for those of us who live our lives in the school system, as I do, right? It's like so perfect. It's like thank you God for like literally like planting it exactly as like we, like whatever would have wanted to, right? Right? We're like, you start the year with a holiday that's all about introspection and goal setting and thinking about what you want this year to be like and what you want to accomplish this year. It's like so perfect, right? And then it ends with Shavuos. And why is it perfect to like end your like Midrashah year with Shavuos? It's like amazing. You get the Torah, you stay up all night learning, and you guys are going to give the shiurim and show, like, showcase what you accomplished this year. Yeah, good to know. You can start preparing now. Anyway, no, I'm just joking. Anyway.
Send me the recording.
But my point is that it's like literally like so tailor-made, right, for the year that, again, you start with like Elul and Tishrei and all the introspection and goal setting, right, with Rosh Hashanah. You end with the culmination of getting the Torah, and you guys, again, will really feel like you got the Torah this year, and you'll prepare shiurim, and it's like perfect package, right? Except that realize what would be the serious, massive problem if, in fact, Shavuos was the end of, like, the story? What would be the huge, huge problem if Shavuos was the end of the story? Yeah? Yeah, it ends in disaster. It ends in disaster. Shavuos does not have a happy ending. Okay? It's like this amazing thunder and lightning show, and God comes and says, I am Hashem, your God, and don't have any other gods besides me. And every single man, woman, and child sees God and says, Naaseh v'nishma. And Moshe goes up for 40 days and he's gonna come down with the luchot. But he does, comes down right with those luchot, and what? Sees the people dancing around the golden calf and shatters the luchot and breaks the covenant. Like, do you understand that if the year ended with Shavuos, the year would end with our relationship with God in, like, tatters and, like, the covenant broken and, like, it would be, like, really awful, right? So even though it works well for, like, the Midrashah year, it's actually good that that is not actually really the way that the year is structured. And how do we know that in the Torah's view, that's actually not the case? The first holiday is not Rosh Hashanah. Exactly, because it says, was that the next verse on the sheet? No, it's not even. Good for you. No, I thought I did put it on the sheet, but no, I didn't. But so good for you that you knew it on your own. Yes, right? According to the Torah, what's the first month? Is Nisan, not Tishrei, right? HaChodesh HaZelachem Rosh Chodeshim, exactly as you said very impressively, right? Yes, Nisan is the first month, which means that what's the first holiday? Pesach, not Rosh Hashanah. And by the way, what supports, what other, like just straight shot of the Torah supports the fact that Rosh Hashanah in the Torah's view is not Rosh Hashanah? It's the seventh month, it's not the first month, right? So again, even though in our lives, my own included, we sort of live with the sense that Rosh Hashanah is the beginning of the year and Shavuos is the end, in the Torah's view, it's very clearly not. And once we realize again what we pointed out at the beginning of the shiur, that all the Shlosh Regalim are the story of one single year and it's within 2 months, then it's very clear, just even in terms of like the way the story plays out, that of course what has to be the first holiday of the year, meaning what's the beginning of the story? Once you realize it's telling a story, of course it's right, and it's got to be Pesach, because that's the beginning of the story when we march out of Egypt, get God's protection, get the Torah, right? Of course Pesach is the beginning, and again, the Torah says it straight out. Pesach is the beginning, right? Once we realize that Pesach is the beginning, right, then we can understand that we count the 7 weeks of Sefirat HaOmer, we get to Shavuos of getting the Torah. Now, here's what's amazing. Not only are these three of the Shlosh Regalim from one single calendar year, but the day when Moshe comes down and sees Chet Egel and shatters the Luchot, anybody know what the date is? Yeah, it's Shiva Asar B'Tammuz. Okay, Shiva Asar B'Tammuz, right? You and I, when we think of Shiva Asar B'Tammuz, what do we associate it with? Korban Beit HaMikdash, right? Long before the Beit HaMikdash was ever built, Shiva Asar B'Tammuz was already a day of tragedy for Am Yisrael. Look at the second source on the sheet. right? The Mishnah Masechet Tanit explicitly says, there were five terrible things that happened to our forefathers on Shiva Asar B'Tammuz and five on Tisha B'Av. The first one of Shiva Asar B'Tammuz is B'Shiva Asar B'Tammuz Nishtabru Haluchot. Okay? So again, long before there even was a Beit HaMikdash, Shiva Asar B'Tammuz is part of this same story of this same year. Okay, so again, we have Pesach, Shavuos. Really, I'm going to even move Sukkot down for a minute, right? Because, right, I'll just stick it here, because Sukkot is part of it also, but we got to figure it out. Because really, again, Sukkot belongs there. We're going to have to understand where it is. But we now have Yud Zayin Tammuz is part of this same story. And what would you put here is like, again, Pesach is Yisrael's time. Shavuos is Matan Torah. What Shiva Asar B'Tammuz is? Yeah, Chayta Egel and the breaking of the Luchot. Exactly. I mean, and part of therefore what I want you to see, which I think is such an amazing and powerful message about Judaism, is Judaism does not whitewash things, right? Like we have the story of David HaMelech and Batsheva and Yehuda and Tamar and whatever, right? This year, which is this amazing foundational year, had the highest highs marching out of Egypt, getting the Torah, and we don't whitewash. It also has the lowest low. It has the worst sin that Am Yisrael ever did. It's part of the story of this year also. But here's what's amazing is, okay, so again, so Shavuos, good thing it's not the end of the year because it ends in tragedy with Shiva Asar B'Tammuz with Chayta Egel and the breaking of the Luchot. But it's not the end of the story because what then happens next? What happens after Chayta Egel?
Get it back.
Good. Exactly, right? Moshe begs and pleads for forgiveness, right? And especially for losing my Gemara shir, I even went into this more there, but we don't have time to do that tonight, right? Is when, here's what's really amazing also, right? But probably even, I hope a lot of you know about this, right? Is Moshe begs and pleads for forgiveness, and God finally, right, says, yes, Moshe, I will forgive you. On what date, calendar date, in history? Yom Kippur! I want you to appreciate Yom Kippur is part of the story of this same 1 year. It's all from 1 year. Okay, is Yud Tishrei, right, is, right, Yom Kippur, is also part of the same story, right? It's forgiveness for Chayta Egel, right? I'll just say Kapara, right? Chayta Egel. All part, right? I just want you to appreciate. Amalil, Pesach, Shavuos, Shiva Asar B'Tammuz, Yom Kippur, Sukkot. It's literally, it's all 1 year. It's like crazy. Here, wait, I'll rearrange. I just realized these I did, it doesn't matter. Whatever. You got the idea. Meaning, like, these I wrote the holiday first. I should have written Yom Kippur first, but whatever. Anyway, right? So pointing it's all part of the story. So again, Moshe begs and pleads for forgiveness. And God, in fact, does grant him forgiveness. And again, it says, I spoke about my Gemara here, it's actually an amazing divine revelation. And what does God reveal to Moshe amidst the divine forgiveness and giving the second Luchot? He reveals, also shows his back and the Yidgum Midrach. No, it's true, he does, right? And it's the most amazing thing. Meaning, I want you to appreciate, Matan Torah, we don't see God, right? We see thunder and cloud and lightning, right? Smoke. Right? Here, God actually shows a part of himself. It's amazing. And he reveals the Yud Gimel Midot HaRachamim, right? On none other than Yom Kippur, than Yud Tishrei. And therefore, he forgives Am Yisrael. Right? Now, here's again what's amazing. I would think, okay, we got it why Shavuos could not be the end of the year, because that would be a disaster, right? Ends with the breaking of the Luchot and the shattering of the covenant, and that would be really bad, right? That's Shiva Asar B'Tammuz. But once we have Yom Kippur, and God says, Salachti Chidvarecha, and renews the covenant, and gives the Yigimel Midot HaRachamim, and gives Moshe this amazing divine revelation, that should be the end of the year, right? That should be the climax. That should be when we, like, march off with God into the sunset, right? Like, why is Yom Kippur not the end of the year? And not only is it not the end of the year, but as we are about to experience, right, you get this somewhat like anticlimactic, if I dare call it that, though hopefully by the end of this year we won't feel that way, but it kind of feels sometimes an experience, right? Like, all right, we put all of our all into getting ready for Rosh Hashanah, and then we really built up for Yom Kippur, and like, another one, it's like enough already, right? Like, sometimes it feels a little bit anticlimactic. Again, like, what on earth, as we asked at the beginning, what on earth is Sukkot doing here? Now, here's what's really, I think, amazing, is, and Shkayach, too, who was it who pointed, I think Davido was pointing it out, is, wait, she's still here? Yeah, no, wait, no, okay, well, but we should come back and hear her point. What's it called, is that what we've been focusing on, like, till now, what I keep on emphasizing is, all of these dates, again, the Shavuos Shmuel, and Shavuos Harvest Tammuz, and Yom Kippur, it's, like, unbelievable, are all from one calendar year, but here's, oh, good, I just quoted you, Davido, so glad you came back. What's it called, is, right, not only are they the story of one single calendar year, but what's super cool, and Davido was already machaving to this before, is it's actually all the story. What we're doing with our Chagim every single year over and over again is we are reliving the story of one single book of Chavisha Chumshei Torah, which is which book, as Davida realized a few minutes ago? Sefer Shemot, okay? Basically what we're redoing with our holidays every year, Sefer Shemot is basically the entire book tells the story of that one single foundational year in Am Yisrael's history, right, that starts with our slavery in Egypt and gets through the plagues and gets through Kriyat Yamsuf and our marching out and the getting of the Torah, right? Basically what we're doing with our Chagim is reliving one single year, and that one year is the year that's actually told in Sefer Shemot. So basically what we're redoing with our holidays every single year is we're reliving Sefer Shemot. Like, that's what we're doing with our Chagim. Now, here's what's amazing. Once we realize that that is what we are doing with our Chagim, is reliving that one foundational year in Am Yisrael's history, which is the year that's described in Sefer Shemot, then if, going back to the questions we started with, which is, why on earth, right? Again, Sukkot should be here, right, with this arrow. Sukkot belongs here between Pesach and Shavuos. What on earth is it doing here at the end of the year? And by the way, I should add it to the source sheet. There's even a pasuk that explicitly tells us that Sukkot is the end of the year. Anybody know what I'm talking about? It says, like, B'tzeitcha, right, B'tzeitcha Shana, right? I should put it on the source sheet. It's very clear. The pasuk explicitly refers to Sukkot as the end of the year. But again, but why? It doesn't make any sense, right? It should be here. So here's the key, which is so cool. And remember, we also asked, what on earth is the significance of these booths? If, like, Akedas Yitzchak and the end of the flood and Lech Lecha, none of those things get a holiday, these booths get a holiday? So here's the amazing thing. If we want to understand both the significance of this holiday and why on earth it is when it is, now we can understand, where do we need to look? Where do we need to look? Sefer Shemot. We just have to look at Sefer Shemot, right? Meaning, we basically covered, right, the whole first bunch of prakim, right, again, with the slavery and the makot, and, right, the Yetzias Mitzrayim and Kriyat Yamsuf, right, that's all in Pesach. And then we get Matan Torah, right, basically covers through, like, Perek Kaf Dalet, right? And then we get Chet Ha'Egel, covers basically through, like, Perek Lamed Dalet, right? And so, and then we get, right, then that includes the forgiveness for Chet Ha'Egel, that really with Yom Kippur is really Perek Lamed Aleph. If we want to understand what on earth is this random holiday of Sukkot about these boots that's planted where it doesn't belong, that doesn't seem that significant, if we want to understand what is it really about, then really what we just need to do is open up our Tanakh and open up Sefer Shemot and, like, to understand it, but let's just look what happens next in Sefer Shemot. So you guys tell me. Anybody know? Don't call it out because I want everyone to have a chance to think about it. So meaning basically it's right after like Perek Lamed Aleph, it's right after we get forgiveness for Chet Ha'Egel. It's the entire last chunk. It's not like a small thing. It's like 10 chapters. Okay? It's not small. Okay? I'll give a hint though that it's not like an event, but it's not small. It like really if you put the whole thing together, it's like 15 chapters of the, it's like the whole entire last chunk of Sefer Shemot is all about this thing. Yeah, what is it? Anybody who knows? It's the Mishkan. The Mishkan. Immediately after we get forgiven, literally, it's the very next parak, okay? Parak Lamed Dalet, we get forgiven for Chet Ha'Egel, and God gives the second Luchot, the very next parak, God says, and now build the Mishkan, okay? Once we realize that, then now put it together. Then what is this holiday that suddenly got like tacked on to right on the heels of Yom Kippur where it doesn't belong? All of a sudden, what do we realize? What are we really doing when we build our sukkah? We're building the Mishkan. As soon as we realize that what we're redoing, wait, it gets cooler. It's really amazing. Once you realize that, what highlights that? There's so many parallels between the Mishkan and our sukkah, right? Okay. Throw some out. Like what some of the... we'll talk about the height. I'm going to save that one for last. Very nice. Good. What else? Throw out some other parallels. So the walls, what do you mean? Meaning the fact...
The opening of the Mishkan is not complete.
Excellent. Meaning it's very temporary. Yes? Is that what you...
I meant the numbers, but that too.
Oh, I don't know what you meant by the numbers. Oh, meaning that it's not like fully enclosed. Yeah. Meaning in the same way as it could be only like 2.5 walls or whatever. Excellent, right? No, but it's all connected. But it's all connected. Right? Exactly. Meaning, what do we refer to like the Mishkan as? The Ohel Moed, right? Why is it so temporary? It had to be because the whole point is it had to be taken apart and put back together constantly as they were traveling through the desert, right? What do we call the permanent temple when we get to the land of Israel? The Beit HaMikdash, you understand it, right? The Beit HaMikdash is supposed to be the Ohel Moed. This one is temporary. Now think about it. What's one of them? I'm sure you've learned this since elementary school. It has to be, right? And what's one of the definitions of a sukkah to be a kosher sukkah? What's one of the defining characteristics halachically? It has to be temporary. Dirat Arai. Yes, I hope that sounds familiar, right? It has to be a temporary structure. If your sukkah is too permanent, it's puzzle. It's no good. It must by definition be temporary, just like the Mishkan, right? Not only that, but here's something also really cool. It's very unique. It's the only holiday that's like this, where the amount of time that we celebrate it is very unique, right? Like, what length of time is the holiday of Sukkot? It's like 7 days, so that we have by Pesach, but you then kind of have this like extra eighth day that it's like totally unclear. Is it part of Sukkot? Is it not, right? Meaning you have 7 days followed by Shmini Atzeret. What's that parallel to in terms of the Mishkan? After they finished building the Mishkan, they had, what was it called? The Sheva Yemei Miluim, right? The 7 days of inauguration followed by the climactic Yom HaShmini. Okay, it's like so crazy where it's so clear. Like the 7 days followed by this like climactic eighth day. So too, it's exactly how we celebrate Sukkot. I think it is so clear. But again, put together with the timing. To me, the real clincher is the timing that once we realize we're reliving Sefer Shemot, then you just have to look. What happens literally the parak right after Yom Kippur, the parak right after God gives the second Luchot? Literally, the very next parak is build the Mishkan. It's the entire rest of the Sefer. Literally, until the end, the entire rest is all about building the Mishkan. It's so clear. Now, here's what's really that amazing. Once, again, to me, I think it's just like so, like, oh my gosh, like once you see it, it's like so clear. But what do we have to ask is still, what's the significance? Remember, we started even in the beginning by asking, what on earth is the significance of these like boots, right? So I hope now we can say, yes, I want to be clear. I'm not saying it's not the boots, the sukkim, right? The first pasuk on the source sheet says it's the boots. But in addition to the boots, it is also the Mishkan, right? And by the way, once we realize that it's also the Mishkan, then we can answer the first question we started with, right? Meaning, if this holiday is only about the boots, then we're obviously, does it belong? Right here. If it's just the way God protected us, it should be right after Pesach where we drew that arrow. Once we realize it's also the boost, but also the Mishkan, then of course it's not here, but it's here. Why, of course, does it have to be here? That's when we built the Mishkan. We built the Mishkan right after Yom Kippur. We built the Mishkan here as soon as we marched out of Egypt. It only happened here. Once we understand, like, I think it's so clear. The very fact that God put it here where it doesn't belong was God's way of calling out to us. Notice there is an additional significance. Had it been here where it belongs, it would have just been the way God protected us, and that would have been it. By putting it here where it doesn't belong, and we're just reliving Sefer Shemot, it's God's way of saying it's also the protection. He said that straight out. But it's also the Mishkan. I just think it's so clear, and to me, its placement is like the most glaring thing. But on top of that, again, the 7 days followed by the eighth day, and the temporary nature, etc. But what we still then have to ask is, still, what's the significance, right? So at least now we can see, okay, it's not just the boost, it's the boost and the Mishkan. I can begin to understand why this gets a holiday when Akedas Yitzchak and the end of the flood and Lech Lecha didn't. But I still want to understand, why do we need a holiday? I still feels a little anticlimactic, right? Like, let's end the year with Yom Kippur, this amazing high in our relationship with God. Like, why do we need this holiday of Sukkot, of the Mishkan, right after Yom Kippur? And by the way, I hope that you're aware that it's not even just, I don't know, like, say, I hope that maybe some of your families did this, right? That there's a minhag, but a strong minhag. It's codified in two different places in the Shulchan Aruch. Both the very last halacha of Hilchot Yom Kippurin and the opening halacha of Hilchot Sukkah is that when is there a strong minhag to start building the sukkah? Literally, Mote Yom Kippur, last night, Mamish, go straight from Yom Kippur into building the sukkah. Like, there's clearly some, like, inextricable link. There's something going on here. So why? What's the significance of the fact that, as I said, it's literally in Sefer Shemot, it's the very next parak. They get forgiven for Chet Egel. The very next parak, God says, now build the Mishkan. And that's what we do. I want you to appreciate. Why is there that minhag? We're reliving Sefer Shemot. The next parak, God says, build the Mishkan. We literally go straight from Yom Kippur into building the Sukkah. But why? What's the significance of building the Mishkan immediately on the heels of Yom Kippur? So what I want to suggest is as follows. I think we need it. We need it. It's not just this, like, lagged, you know, whatever, downer of, like, attacked on holiday that, like, it's too... No, we need Sukkot here. Why do we need Sukkot here? Why do we need the Mishkan? We absolutely... The year would not be complete without it. Why? And Yom Kippur wouldn't be complete without it. Why? Because in both directions. Meaning, the very fact that Am Yisrael went straight from getting forgiveness for Chet Egel, straight into building the Mishkan, was critical. Why? It was Am Yisrael's way of expressing to God in a way that nothing else could, that when they say they're sorry and that they're doing tshuva for Chet Egel, they really, really mean it. Why was the Mishkan the perfect vehicle to express that? Yes, no, literally, it's doing exactly what they did to build the Egel, but instead now they're doing it for God. You understand? It was the exact same thing, exactly that. They took their gold, their jewelry, their silver, their earrings, right? And before they gave it in donations to the Egel, now they're doing the exact same thing, but they're doing it to build a house. exactly what Am Yisrael need. It's their way to show. It's not just lip service when we're saying, God, we're sorry. It's their way of like putting it into action and showing we mean it. We really, God, we mean it. When we say we're sorry, we're going to like, again, do a tikkun. We're doing real tshuva gemura by doing the same thing, but in the opposite. And then here's what's, I think, even more amazing. By God telling them immediately after Yom Kippur, now I want you to build me the Mishkan, was God's perfect way to express to us that when he says, Salachti chidvarecha, he means it. Why was the Mishkan the perfect, perfect? There could have been no more perfect expression for God to tell us, and I mean it when I tell you, Salachti chidvarecha. Why is the Mishkan the perfect thing?
The cloud.
Good. He brings himself exactly. What I would say is like this, right? What's the entire like purpose and function of us building this house for God anyway, right? He doesn't need a house. He's not physical, right? The whole idea of it, if you look, is the source that's on the bottom of the first side, right? Shmos Chavhei Perakhet, Pasakhet, I think captures the essence of the Mishkan, right? Va'asuli Migdash V'shachanti B'tocham, right? The essence of the Mishkan is this idea that God is going to dwell in our midst. But here's what's unbelievable. In the wake of Chet HaEgel, God initially wants to do what? What was God's initial plan of punishment? Wipe us out entirely, right? And just like start again from Moshe, right? But Moshe begs and pleads and says, no, and erase me from your book, and I'm not taking that, and Zechut Avot, and like you promised us, and like all that, right? And so God says, fine, I'm not going to wipe you out. But what's God's plan B? He didn't go straight from, I'm going to wipe you out, to, okay, I totally forgive you. What was the middle plan? When God said, okay, fine, I won't kill you, but what? Exactly, but I'm not going to live in your midst. Take a look. It's unbelievable. It's so clear.
Oh, but now he's living in the midst.
Yes, we're going to get there. Yes. If you take a look, right, look at how God describes himself. Right, if you look at the psukim from Shemot Perakuf Gimel that are kind of in the middle of the back over there, right, it says when God, and this is pre-Chet HaEgel, right, in Shemot Perakuf Gimel, pre-Chet HaEgel, God says, Hine anochi sholech malach lefanach, right, I'm going to send an angel before you, but look at how God describes it. Ki lo, I'm just doing the underline, ki lo yisa lefishachem, but this angel will not forgive your sins. Ki shimi bikirbo, my name is in that angel. I am in that angel. And because I am in that angel, if you have the chutzpah to sin in front of my face, I'm going to have to wipe you out. And therefore, when in fact Yisrael do sin in front of God's face, right, and do Chet HaEgel, even so God initially wants to wipe them out exactly like he said he would. And Moshe begs and pleads, and God is like, okay, fine, I won't wipe them out. But look at how he changes the plan. Look at the Pesukim in Shmot Perek Lamed Gimel. Look at Pasuk Bet, I will just do the underlines. He says, Vishalachti lefanecha malach, right? He's like, fine, I won't wipe you out. I'll still take you into the land of Israel. But he says, I'll send before you an angel. And at first glance, we're like, okay, no problem. That's what God said before. Great, we're in good shape. But look at how he describes this angel. Look at Pasuk Gimel, the underline. Ki lo e'ele bikir b'cha. Ki am kishe orifata penachel chabaderech. Look at the contrast, right? In the previous set of Pesukim in Shmot Perek Chav Gimel, before Chet HaEgel, God had said, and now he's saying, I'm not going in your midst. You're a stiff-necked people. And if I go in your midst, I'm going to have to wipe you out. Right? And therefore he says, fine, I forgive you, but I'm not going to be in your midst. And here's what's critical. If God is not going to be in our midst, then what will there no longer be? What will there not be? A Mishkan. The whole point of the Mishkan is, if God is saying, I'm not going to dwell in your midst, there won't be a Mishkan. And in fact, take a look at what God describes at the end of those self-same psukim, at the end of Shmo Perek Lamed Gimel psukim, right? Look at Pasuk Zayin. Umoshi yikach et ha'oel v'natalo michutz l'machaneh. He had to move the oel outside the camp. Harchek min ha'machaneh. Look how it's emphasizing at a distance from the camp, right? And it says at the end, v'yakom avakesh Hashem, anyone who sought God, yetzei el ha'moed, had to go out of the camp to oel moed. Asher michutz l'machaneh. How many times can it emphasize? Like, we got it. It's outside the camp. Why does it keep emphasizing over and over and over again, michutz l'machaneh, michutz l'machaneh? Because the point is, that wasn't the initial plan. It was supposed to be in the camp. And now it's not. And therefore, now we can appreciate. When Moshe is up there on Har Sinai, begging and pleading for forgiveness, what is the only, I think, way for God to really express the message to Am Yisrael? I really, really mean it when I say, Salachti chidvarecha. What's the only way that God can really, like, show them I really mean it? Is to tell them, build the Mishkan. Build it. Right? That structure that I told you before, but now it was going to be outside the camp and I'm not going to be in your midst. When God says, Now start it. Carry out that construction. I want you to go ahead and start gathering all the materials, right? It was the most amazing. I would have to imagine the people must have been like beside themselves with joy. Like, oh my gosh, like he really forgave us. He's really moving back in with us. That's what the Mishkan symbolized, right? And then we can appreciate why, yes, of course we need Sukkot immediately after Yom Kippur, both because we need it as our way to show God all the tshuva and the clapping al chetz that we just did all day. We mean it, God. We're throwing ourselves into a mitzvah for you. And it's God's way of saying, and when I said to you, salachti chiparacha, I mean it, and I'm moving in with you. And here's the final clincher that I think is amazing, is if all that is true, then what does that mean about our Sukkot, like yours and mine? Like, what does that mean about our Sukkah then?
God's there.
God is there. Now, here's what's unbelievable, okay? Take a look at the last sources that I put on the source sheet, okay? First of all, there's a Gemara in Sukkah, Daf Chet Amud Aleph, that says, Kishim shachal shim shamayim ala chagiga, kachal shim shamayim al ha-sukkah. Yes, the name of God resides on our Sukkah just like it resides on a carbon. But really, the clincher that I think is just absolutely unbelievable is the last source that I put there, okay? The very, very opening Mishnah of Masechet Sukkah, which maybe some of you have had the chance to learn, but if not, I'm glad you get to see it now. The very, very first Mishnah, opening Mishnah of Masechet Sukkah says, right, and as we would perhaps expect, right, it gives some of the defining, right, talachot about, like, what defines a kosher sukkah. And it tells us, Sukashi gvuha l'mala me'eshrim amah psula, right, it can't be too tall, it can't be above 20 amot, right, Rabbi Yehuda says it's okay if it's that tall. For our purposes, we need, Vishaynam, this is Eliana, what you mentioned, Vishayna gvuha asarat tfachim. If it's not at least 10 tefachim, right? A tefach is like a hand's breadth, so it's like, I don't know, whatever.
Well, you can go right in there if it's lower.
Correct. You would have to, like, slither like, in. But, like, whatever. So to a certain degree, it'd be hard to live in. But, right? So whatever. You could have little mini sukkahs. Anyway, but wait, but you have to catch this. It's really unbelievable. Anyway, but point being, the Mishnah is telling us that the minimum height of a sukkah, it has to be at least 10 tefachim tall. Okay? Now, Gemara, in classic Gemara fashion, says, right, Minelan, if you see, right, the very last bit of, right, where it's commenting on the part where it says it's got to be at least 10 tefachim, it says Minelan. When the Gemara asks Minelan, what's it looking for? Give me a source. Where'd you get that from, rabbis? Did you just, like, make that up? Did you just say, oh, well, that's probably the, like, minimum height that a person could fit in? Like, where'd you get that minimum height of 10 tefachim from? Unbelievable. Listen to this. Itmar, Rav, Rabbi Chanina, Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Chaviva Manu, right, the following group of rabbis taught, in parentheses, it kind of says, Bechula Seder Moed, Kolki Hayezuga, Chalufi Rabbi Yochanan, Amayle Rabbi Yonatan, which just means any place within Seder Moed, you see this group of rabbis, really switch out Rabbi Yochanan, put in Rabbi Yonatan, whatever, it's just who was in the group of rabbis, but either way, you've got a group of rabbis sitting there and saying, Aron Tisha, Vikaporet Tefach, Harekan Asara. Whoa, you understand? This is the opening sugya of Masechet Sukkah. They want to know, where do we learn the minimum height of a sukkah, that it's got to be at least 10 tefachim, and where are they learning it from? The height of the aron. Do you understand where that is, like a complete non sequitur, unless you learn what we just learned, right? It's like, what on earth does the height of the aron have to do with, like, the height of a sukkah? Like, who cares the aron was 10 tefachim, right? Already, I hope that you're, like, seeing, like, whoa, this is crazy, but it gets crazier. Okay, so first of all, the very fact that they're learning the height of our sukkah from the aron, already unbelievable, but continue on and see. It then continues and says, Uchtiv, and it says about the Aron, Vino Adati Lacha Sham, I will meet with you, Moshe. I mean, this is God talking, right? God says, I will meet with you there. Vidibarti Tchame al Kaporet, I will speak to you from on top of the Kaporet. Vitanya, we have in a Brighter where it says, Rabbi Yossi Omer, May Olam Loyar Dashchina Lemata, that the Shchina doesn't come down to within 10 tefachim of the ground. Velovalu Moshe Eliyahu Lemaron, and Moshe Eliyahu, even the people who ascended to the heaven, didn't fully ascend. Why? Shneemar, it says, Hashamayim Shamayim LaHashem, the Ha'aretz Natan Livnei Adam, meaning the heavens are God's domain, and therefore man, even Moshe and Eliyahu, who ascended to heaven, couldn't fully go up to the, like, highest heavens, because, like, that's God's domain. And Ha'aretz Natan Livnei Adam, God gave us, man, the earth as our domain, and therefore what? God kiviyachol doesn't come to within 10 tefachim of the ground, because he, like, wants to, like, respect our space, and he gave us Ha'aretz Natan Livnei Adam. Why then did the Aron have to be 10 tefachim? Because the function of the Aron was for God to come and meet with Moshe, as it says, Adati L'chasham. The function was for God to come. But again, God won't come to within 10 tefachim of the ground, because that he, like, respects our space. Therefore, what? The Aron had to be 10 tefachim for what purpose? To enable God to come down. If it were any shorter, it wouldn't work, because the whole function is for God to come and meet with Moshe there. there, and if it's any lower, God, like, Kivyachalik, won't come that close to the ground, because, like, that's our domain, and he gave that space to us. Therefore, it had to be 10 Tefachim so that God could come there. Now, what is the unbelievable parallel now? What did we just say? What did the Mishnah learn from this? The minimum height of yours and my sukkah is 10 Tefachim. And where did they derive that from? From the height of the Aron. And why did the Aron have to be that height? In order to enable the Shechina to come in. What is the unbelievable message about our sukkah? In order to be a kosher sukkah, it has to be a space in which the Shechina can come. And I think it is so clear. That is what we're doing. Meaning, once we realize that, again, what we're doing with our Chagim is reliving this one foundational year, and essentially it's the year that's described in Sefer Shemot, whose climax is the building of the Mishkan, and the climax of the whole book is when God comes and resides in a 24/7 way in the Mishkan. So that's what we're doing. And I want you to even appreciate where, in many ways, as I said, I think a lot of us tend to, like, view the Tishrei Chagim as, like, a workout, right? And, like, Rosh Hashanah is, like, the warm-up, right? And then what's the real deal workout? About something I'm coming to. But I think we would think that Yom Kippur is, like, the real deal. And then Sukkot is, like, the cool down to, like, go back to regular life, right? But I would say, no, it's not. Meaning, we tend to think of it like this, right? That this is, like, Rosh Hashanah, and then this is, like, the high of Yom Kippur, and then this is, like, Sukkot to, like, go back to your life. No, it's not this, right? It's this, right? And Rosh Hashanah is here, and then we build to Yom Kippur, but the climax is Sukkot. Why is Sukkot the climax? Because that, yes, and what I want to even say even more that I think is unbelievable is, I think that we tend to think and to experience that Yom Kippur is the climax. Why? Because it's amazing and it's so spiritual and we're not eating and we're not drinking and we're like malachim and whatever, right? But what? Even in Chutz La'aretz, Yom Kippur is only one day, right? Even though everything else is 2 days, why is Yom Kippur only one day even in Chutz La'aretz? Because we just can't sustain that. Yom Kippur is amazing and it's a high, but it's not sustainable in a 24/7 kind of a way. And you know what? Neither was Matan Torah, right? The Ramban talks about what was the function of the Mishkan, was to take the amazing, awesome experience of Har Sinai and not just let it be a memory, was to make it actually a livable, breathable 24/7 part of, like, Am Yisrael's life. That was the Mishkan, right? The one time, remember how one time Am Yisrael saw God? No. Yeah, it can't be in the intensity of Matan Torah, but living 24/7 with God in your life, that's the goal. That's Sukkot. Why? So again, Yom Kippur, Rishon is like the buildup. Yom Kippur is when we have this intense, intense closeness with God, but Sukkot is the goal. Why is Sukkot the goal? What do we end sort of the Chagim with and kind of end the year? Again, Sukkot is the end, but then we should take it with us into the next year. Yes, is God dwelling in our midst, and it's so cool. So on Yom Kippur, again, we don't eat, we don't drink, we're not wearing regular shoes, we're not washing, we're, like, not fully human, and again, that's awesome, but it's not sustainable. What do we do then? Sukkot is the opposite. What do I mean by Sukkot is the opposite? We live regular lives. What do you do in the sukkah? It's not some amazingly, like, spiritual whatever. You eat, you drink, you hang out, you learn, sleep, right? We're just living our regular 24/7 human lives, but what? We're living them in the presence of God, in the Mishkan, with God in our lives and, like, a palpable presence. Sukkot is sustainable. Again, not that we actually live in the sukkah our whole lives, but that notion of living regular life, eating, drinking, sleeping, regular life, but living it with a sense of God's presence with us, that is something that we're meant to take into the rest of our lives. And that's what I'm saying. It's not this. It's not that Sukkot is the letdown to go into regular life. Sukkot is the climax to take all of what we got from the entire year, starting from Yetzias Mitzrayim, with Matan Torah, with recognizing there's falls. Yes, there's going to be falls, but we build up and we do tshuva, and then the climax is Sukkot when we live regular life, but we do it in the presence of God in our Mishkan, in our sukkah. And so that, I hope, explains why this holiday is so important, that it's not just the boots, it's also the Mishkan, and why it must be here at the end of the year and not here, because it's only here that it takes on the idea of the Mishkan. Yeah. Anyway, that's it. Thanks, everybody. Questions.
Thank you.
Wait, do you realize?
Wait,
this is all. I should actually. I mean, I.